to give it a fighting chance, the policy first has to be implemented. And we really need to focus both on good policy, but crucially on policy implementation, which we've historically understudied.
Welcome to Vox Dev Talks. My name is Tim Phillips. More children than ever in low and middle income countries are going to school, but we know that they still don't learn as much as we would want, and the difference between the educational haves and the educational have-nots is widening. Now, is this because the educational policies are bad, or because the implementation of good policies needs to improve? The most important global challenge to education policy recently, and also its implementation, was the COVID-19 pandemic, as countries were suddenly forced to find and put in place alternative ways to educate millions of children. Noam Angrist of the What Works Hub for Global Education and the University of Oxford is one of the authors of a new study of the global gap between policy and practice that draws on some of the things that we have learnt from COVID-19 and also other educational policy initiatives. He joins me now from the road. I think you're in South Africa. Welcome to Vox Dev Talks, Noam.
Yes, thank you. Great to be here.
Noam, as I said, COVID-19 forms a lot of the focus of what you've researched and written here. Remind us again how widespread those school closures were during COVID that forced innovations in education policy.
Yeah, COVID was quite a historic time for many reasons, as we know, and education was hit hard. Over a billion children were out of school at the height of the pandemic, and hundreds of countries closed their schools. It was a fairly uniform response during the pandemic by governments. We often think of policy as a fairly slow and rigid process. COVID was an interesting time where policies changed quite quickly. So it was an interesting moment to study policy adaptation.
Yes, as you say, they suddenly needed remote learning policies. If we're thinking about low and middle income countries, what options did the policymakers have? How quickly did they have to act as well?
So schools closed quickly, and then exactly, governments had to think about how they would provide an education when school was out, which was a conundrum for governments. Governments typically provide education in school. That's where we think about the locus of education happening. And so governments tried a few things. They tried some internet-based policies. They tried TV. They tried radio. They tried encouraging teachers to call in to students. They tried sending paper packets home. So there was quite a variety of policies tried. And one thing that was very interesting is the World Bank, UNICEF, UNESCO teamed up to actually survey government officials in over 100 countries around the world to systematically document exactly what those governments tried to do.
There were so many different policies at the time, and there were so many variations in policy. You need some reliable indicator of what those policies were. Does it provide granular detail about what those policies were and when they were adopted?
So there were a few waves of this data in the early part of the pandemic, partway through later, and it's not perfect, but it was more data than we had on government policy adoption, even in non-COVID times. Actually, just the systematic documentation of what governments do remains understudied. It actually remains an area where we don't have enough data. There's been some prior efforts. There's an effort called SABER that the World Bank launched in prior years, which we also look at actually as a comparison point in addition to the COVID times. But it's rare to get this data on which policies governments adopt. And so we were quite keen to dig into it.
You're also measuring and comparing that with the policy effectiveness. What is a measure of effectiveness in this context? Where do you find data on that as well?
So what we tried to do, we tried to see first what policies did governments adopt or adapt. We then also wanted to see when government officials were saying something was happening in the country, was it actually reaching households in practice? Was it making it to citizens, to households in practice? And so we triangulated this data of the high-level policy with household-level surveys on what households said they were receiving. So, for example, a government official might have said that there was a national radio program, and then we could actually go and see if in that country citizens were saying in a nationally representative survey that they received and engaged in that radio program. So we got a very unique measure of what we've now called the policy practice gap. And we could quantify it. Mm-hmm. We could quantify the magnitude of it. Now, I think everyone knows that there is a gap between policy and practice. The question is, how big is it? And the other question is, how much does it vary systematically across countries, across regions? When you decompose the gap into its components, what's explaining the gap? And so we're able to do a lot of that in this new piece that we've just published in Nature Human Behavior, which we've called Mind the Gap Between Education Policy and Practice. Now, is this effective? It's not actually effectiveness. So we don't in this piece quantify whether children are learning as a result, but we do quantify whether the policy was actually received in practice, which is a necessary, if not sufficient, condition to ensure children would then learn.
I see. So we're not going anywhere near educational outcomes in this particular piece of research.
In this piece of research, we're not measuring the learning, mm-hmm. but you can confidently assume that if a household didn't receive a policy, they're very unlikely the children would learn as a result of that. So it's a necessary condition. But it could be the case that you have a good policy that's implemented that still, for some reason, doesn't produce learning. That's part of the initial motivation of the piece. There for decades have been this wave of high-level policy pronouncements that have progressed. So, you know, for a while, there was a focus on getting kids into school, but there wasn't actually much mention of learning. So the Millennium Development Goals mentioned getting kids into school, but didn't mention learning. Now, there's been a new wave of policy pronouncements like the Sustainable Development Goals, the World Bank Human Capital Project, which finally are putting an emphasis on learning, which is very exciting. So there's a growing policy prioritization of learning outcomes, which is critical because getting kids into school does not always produce learning. And so one of the hopes is that these new policy objectives will lead to children learning. The point that we try to make in this piece is to give it a fighting chance, the policy first has to be implemented. And we really need to focus both on good policy, but crucially on policy implementation, which we've historically understudied.
As you say, historically, there has been some spotty data on both sides of what you're measuring here. How many countries were you able to measure this gap for?
Yeah, so we had about 100 countries that had a policy level indicator of what a government official said they did. At the household level, when we triangulated that, we had fewer countries, but still sizable, dozens and dozens of countries. And when we triangulated these two, we had over 30 or so countries where we had both data sources in a reliable fashion and a fairly global picture, Latin America, Sub-Saharan Africa, Middle East, South Asia. So we were able to get a reasonable view across different settings.
Okay, so how big was the gap between policy and practice?
We find that in some regions, like Latin America, there actually wasn't a huge gap, just about 5%. So that was a pleasant surprise, a bright spot.
Yes.
In contrast, we find in Sub-Saharan Africa, we see a massive gap. So we see over 70% of households not receiving a policy that the government said was being rolled out. So it seems like a first order issue in Sub-Saharan Africa, but in some regions, it wasn't as big an issue.
Is this driven by poverty, do you think? Is this a gap that would naturally close as a part of the process of development?
It doesn't actually correlate very closely with GDP per capita. Oh. And so that is a bit of a puzzling and interesting finding. So for example, some regions like the Middle East, for example, are actually relatively high on GDP per capita, but they have a big policy practice gap. And so it doesn't seem to be the case that just the richer countries have smaller gaps. The Middle East is richer than Latin America, but has a bigger policy practice gap. Interestingly, this is also mirrored in learning outcome patterns. So actually, the Middle East is also richer than Latin America, but has worse learning outcomes than some countries in Latin America. And so one of the things that we think is going on here is this is about service delivery. This is not a problem that you can only throw money at. You have to have really high quality implementation systems to ensure that policy practice gaps are closed and to ensure learning. You can't just kind of build a school. That's not enough. You have to ensure that teachers are trained and that they're showing up every day. And there's a complex process that has to be followed. And often that takes a lot more than resources to make happen.
Give me an insight into how you are measuring the quality of policies and the quality of implementations. I know for the policies, you have a measure of policy naivety, and for implementation, what does effective or ineffective delivery mean?
We wanted to see, was it the case that the government launched a policy that was just a bit naive to begin with? It sort of sounded nice, but wasn't realistic. And so we looked at the case where a government might have launched a national radio program, but citizens didn't actually have access to radios. So we used data from the demographic health surveys and a few other surveys to see what did people actually have access to. And we can do that for each policy, for radio, for TV, for internet, and so forth. We find on average, policies weren't naive. They were actually fairly realistic. We find that governments launched radio programs where citizens had radios, launched internet programs where there were internet accessibility. So it wasn't a naivety in the policy. Mm-hmm. And it looks like most of the gap is explained by ineffective service delivery rather than naive policy. I will say we do find quite a bit of variation. So this is quite varied by country. And so you can actually look at this country by country to diagnose what was the big reason for the gap. Was it a naive policy or ineffective service delivery? But on average, we find most of the story is ineffective service delivery.
And is this bad delivery? Is it that the message isn't getting across, or were there particular pieces of help that households needed that weren't getting to them?
So it's not yet clear, and this is a first step. We're documenting some gaps, we're giving a flavor of them, but what we're really hoping is to motivate a more in-depth research agenda on these issues and a focus on policy implementation. So often there's been a lot of focus on policy formulation, which is critical and very difficult, and we have to get that right, but there just hasn't been as much of a focus on policy implementation or an implementation science. That's something that's caught on a lot more in public health, but not yet in education. And so we make a case that this is something that should be getting a lot more attention. And so there's only so much we can say at this point. We have some evidence, but actually what we need is a lot more evidence on these areas.
The evidence that you have, particularly in sub-Saharan Africa, is very stark. Should we be alarmed about the size of this gap?
We should be. This isn't a tertiary issue. It's a first order issue. We often view policy as a very rigid, immovable thing. And in some cases it is. But here's an interesting example where a policy changed fairly quickly. Now, obviously, the times were very demanding. And so perhaps we saw unusual levels of adaptation. But we saw adaptation. We saw policy change fairly quickly. But we didn't see good implementation and service delivery. And so it just reveals that we really need to double down on this policy implementation gap. I will say the main focus of the nature human behavior pieces during COVID, we also have a companion empirical component where we look at pre-COVID settings using this data set, Saber, that I mentioned before, and we look at policies like early childhood development. It's a relatively new thing for governments to provide early childhood development policies and programs. And there we actually see similar patterns where governments have been reasonably swift and adaptive in adopting those policies. But there, when we triangulate that data with household level data, we see very similarly sized gaps and very similar patterns. We again see Latin America as a bright spot, and sub-Saharan Africa has the biggest gap. So we actually see quite surprisingly similar patterns in this non-COVID setting as well. So it's a first order issue.
Interesting. So this methodology that you're using that I haven't seen before, this can be applied to all sorts of educational policy. It's not just something specific to the exceptional policy innovations that were happening within the pandemic.
Exactly. And we would be interested to see this type of analysis done for other policies. So as there's more data at the policy level on what governments are rolling out, and as there's more household level data or school level data on what is being received, we would love to see more explicit quantification of these gaps and interrogation of what's leading to them and how to close them.
As you say, we've now got two pieces of good news about Latin America. Should we be looking at Latin America and maybe trying to copy the way that policy is turned into practice there?
I always hesitate a bit in these cross-country comparisons because it's always hard to know exactly what went on. There is so many factors at play at once. We need to both be careful of having the next Finland or, you know, the next kind of shiny story that we should all be copying. But at the same time, there is something interesting to look at. You know, Latin America is a clear bright spot here. we mention a few things that might be worth exploring further. Maybe we should look at civil service effectiveness indices. There's growing attention to those, and see if there's something worth unpacking in Latin America there that could be explaining some of this. We often look at human capital in the classroom. It'd be interesting to look at human capital in the civil service and how much that's explaining things. So we don't come out with a definitive view on what's going on there, but it's a bright spark and it's worth further exploration.
On the implementation side, there is more interest in that recently, but still the research agenda is very much weighted to trying to uncover what the best policies should be. Should we be rebalancing that a little bit? Should researchers be focusing maybe less on good policy and more on good delivery in future?
We think that good delivery implementation is really key. And this is a well-known thing in other circles. And I think we know it too as researchers. There are these phrases like execution eats strategy for breakfast in business circles, or the quote on, you know, genius is 1% inspiration, 99% perspiration. We know good ideas are hard to come by and really important, but good implementation and execution is really difficult. And often we take a leap of faith or we don't study and interrogate it enough. So we would love to see more attention and rigor paid to the implementation process. We're launching a new center, the What Works Hub for Global Education out of Oxford, supported by the UK Foreign, Commonwealth and Development Office, as well as the Gates Foundation, which is a large and ambitious new center, over $40 million dedicated to generating and supporting implementation science in global education, motivated in part by exactly these issues and gaps and getting more attention on them.
From what you've seen, Noam, what would happen? What is the risk if we do not close this policy practice gap?
We're seeing kids in school, which is a tremendous success. That's been a very hard win, and there's been a lot of progress there, but they are not learning. It is amazing how little children are learning in school in years of education. And that learning crisis has been amazingly stubborn. Even with some innovation, even with improving policies and pronouncements and global attention, we think that closing these implementation gaps could be a big part of the story. Not the only part of the story, but a big part of the story. And might finally help us make some progress on this very stubborn learning crisis.
I wish you luck, Noam. It's a very interesting piece of research, and I'm sure we'll be seeing a lot more like it in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, great to join you today, and looking forward to continuing to make progress on implementation science.
If you want to read more about this, there is a working paper from the What Works Hub for Global Education called Understanding Gaps Between Policy and Practice. But there is also that piece in Nature Human Behavior that Noam referenced called Mind the Gap Between Education, Policy and Practice. And the authors for both, Noam Angrist and Stefan Durkheim. This has been a Vox Dev Talk. The best way to make sure you don't miss an episode, well, subscribe. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. All our episodes, as always, are at voxdev.org. And if you like what you're hearing, please tell other people about us, and then they'll have access to our episodes as well.